iTunes, and Spotify.
Hi, this is Michael Novick, the interim general manager here at KPFK. I wanted to give you an opportunity, if you've been listening to Sonali, Rising Up the Sonali, and you want a chance to donate to support that show, to do so. We haven't really been doing live pitching during Sonali's show as we do with Miss Jezerich or Democracy Now! Or other programs. But this is your opportunity to call in now, 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK, press 2 for the pledge line. And to donate, if you enjoy Rising Up and you think it's a program that you want to hear on the air, if you want to keep the station on the air, we need your support now. You can go to the website also, kpfk.org, and click on Donate, become a sustainer, or if you're already a sustainer, you might want to make an additional donation. During this current fund drive, the fall membership drive that we've been running, today is the last day, we've raised a little bit over $100,000 in pledges. And that might sound like a lot of money, but it kind of just barely covers the cost of the operation. We need to raise about $29,000 a week, week in and week out, to keep KPFK on the air. And so take this moment now. You know, it's Halloween. We don't want you to ghost us. We want you to stay connected, stay engaged. And one way to do that is to put a little skin in the game, support it. We know that only about 1 in 7 to 1 in 10 of the people who listen to, on-air public radio, community radio like KPFK, actually donate. And if everyone did, we wouldn't have the financial problems that we do have. Again, 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK, press 2 for the pledge line. I'll be on the air later this evening at 7 with a report to the listener. We'll go into greater detail about the financial picture and also some plans we have for some additional fresh programming and some changes in the schedule. You can call in then on the same number, 818-985-5735. In that case, you'll press 1 for the studio line, but this time press 2 for the pledge line, and then that'll give you the right to call in later on and voice your opinion. Thanks for listening. Coming up next is the Gray Zone with Max Blumenthal.
This is Chris Hedges, author of America, the Farewell Tour, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, heard globally at kpfk.org.
Welcome to another episode of Gray Zone Radio. In this episode, we listen to the first half of last week's live stream in which Max Blumenthal and Aaron Mate discuss the ongoing war in Palestine, Israel's gruesome assault on Gaza's civilians, and its desperate campaign for sympathy on the world stage. They'll also cover U.S. airstrikes on northeastern Syria and the looming threat of regional war. Also, there's a special guest appearance by Dr. Gabor Mate. To listen to the entire live stream, find The Gray Zone on YouTube. You can find the link at thegrayzone.com. That's thegrayzone.com. We're also on Twitter, Telegram, and Instagram. Now let's take a listen.
We're dealing with, this is a modern day Holocaust. That's what we're watching, a Nazi regime inflicting genocide before our eyes with our government's full support, the full support of the Biden administration, which is denying death tolls, which is openly boasting that more people in Gaza are going to die, John Kirby, which is shedding crocodile tears for Israelis who were killed on October 7th, but basically cheering on and denying the murder of Gazans. It's an unbelievable moment.
So Israel, according to Wael Dadu, the Al Jazeera reporter whose entire nuclear family was killed in a targeted strike by Israel 2 days ago, 100 warplanes are operating in the Gaza Strip right now. Intense bombing. The Beit Lahia refugee camp in the north has been especially targeted. There have been several massacres today. We can't say how many or how many have been dead. We're hearing just scattered reports of bodies being found in the streets throughout northern Gaza. I can show some of that in a second, but I think you're seeing the skies being lit up by Israeli warplanes, possibly laying the groundwork for a ground invasion. And, as I mentioned, they targeted all the communications equipment. This is what Gaza looked like earlier today. This is the Holocaust that Aaron mentioned earlier. The death toll 48 hours ago passed 7,000, according to Gaza's health ministry, which has published all the names of the dead. The child death toll has tracked at about the usual population rate of 50% of the Gaza Strip, and so we can safely assume that 3,500 children are dead, or people under 18. And these are just the scenes that are common all across the Gaza Strip. We're unable to reach anyone inside right now. Show you more of the carnage. We have tons of footage of massacres. And as I said, it's impossible to record them. Israel comes at night. It tends to kill most at night with its warplanes. And so that was just during the day. And we've seen some discussion. Well, we heard from Daniel Harari, the Israeli army spokesman, that they're expanding ground operations, which could be code for ground invasion. One Telegram channel that's still operating from Gaza has reported a tank incursion in the north. And then you have, this is Daniel Harari, the Israeli army spokesperson, essentially telegraphing that they want to attack the only building still standing in the Al Rimal neighborhood of central Gaza City. Everything else has been totally destroyed. It's where all the administrative centers are. And this is the Al-Shifa Hospital, which has 4,000 beds and thousands of people. Basically, the entire Al Rimal neighborhood are sheltering there because they have nowhere else to go because they're all homeless. They can either go there or they can go south to who knows where, to tent cities. Israel's attacking Khan Yunis. They've attacked the Nusayrat refugee camp. They've attacked everywhere along the way to Rafah.
Start with Shifa Hospital, located in Gaza City, the biggest hospital in Gaza.
Daniel Hagari.
This is the Shifa Hospital. You can see where it locates in Gaza City, the largest hospital in Gaza. It has over 1,500 beds, 4,000 staff, and now it has also more people around the surroundings of the hospital. The red marks that you've seen before and you'll see later are red marks of buildings that are involved with Hamas, and we know it, and we have the proofs that they are with involvement of Hamas.
So basically he presents a mock-up and audio of phone calls as proof that Hamas's military high command, the Al-Qassam brigades, are operating offices under the Al-Shifa hospital in tunnels and announcing essentially that this is their main target. It's unclear to me what they're going to do. I've been to Al-Shifa hospital several times. If they attack Al-Shifa hospital, it would be one of the worst military massacres or massacres of civilians in history that we can think of in our lifetimes. I mean, there are tens of thousands of people there and thousands of people there at all times. And it's on a very small slice of land surrounded by a tight warren of shops and restaurants. So, the irony here is that if you look in the upper right-hand corner, it says IDF HQ Tel Aviv, and that's where he's speaking from. He's speaking from Hakirya, which is a giant complex in Tel Aviv that includes several skyscrapers or large office towers, and it's nestled in the middle of a civilian neighborhood in Tel Aviv, surrounded by residential areas. It's near the Azraeli shopping mall, the biggest shopping mall in Tel Aviv. And so basically this guy is speaking from within a civilian area in the military headquarters of Israel. He himself is using them as human shields while saying Hamas is using a hospital as human shields. And without presenting proof, they're just these phone calls between people in Gaza. They're not even they're intercepted phone calls, and one person is saying, "Oh yeah, they're all under there. They're under that hospital." I think it's important that we pay attention to this presentation.
So they have animation, basically. They're showing us animation. And this is their supposed proof. And those phone calls, which they claim are intercepted, this is the same army that put out a supposed intercepted phone call from some Palestinian militant after the hospital bombing, claiming that these two militants admitted that the rockets were fired from near there. Of course, people pointed out that the accents were really off, did not sound like people from Gaza. And there was even a forensic analysis done on the audio, which basically showed that it had been manipulated and recorded on separate channels. And right. Again, even if you ignore that scrutiny there, the very fact that this military, the same one that lacked the intelligence capabilities to pick up that Hamas was planning October 7th, they now want us to believe that they can intercept phone calls from Hamas militants, which just happened to validate the core aims of Israeli propaganda. It's such a joke. And of course, the U.S. media, trained to parrot whatever the Israeli government says, goes along with it. But anybody with their eyes open can see. I mean, this government is historically mendacious. They lie all the time. Yep. They commit massacres and lie all the time. So this is nothing new. There's no reason to take anything they say seriously.
No, absolutely not. We can assume that there are tunnels. There are tunnels because there's pretty much nowhere else to go.
Sure. Yeah.
Those phone calls. Well, the phone calls were introduced kind of as a propaganda measure to deflect from the bombing of the Al-Ahli Baptist Hospital in Gaza City, where at least 100 were killed, maybe as many as 500 were killed. And that phone call, you know, the accents were Lebanese. Arabic speakers pointed that out immediately. I know, just having been in Egypt and in Lebanon, like I can even tell the Arabic is different. Gaza Arabic is closer to Egyptian Arabic. You'll hear people use expressions like Yarogil and like what's up, man, is like an Egyptian expression. You won't even hear that in the West Bank. People eat differently in the Gaza Strip. They like spicier food because they're closer to the Egyptians. And it's like that distinction was completely papered over because that phone call and a lot of this propaganda is not for the consumption of discerning media consumers or people in the Arab world. It's for the consumption of American dupes and also for Zionists, just to keep them on board as they continue to prosecute this massacre. They need to believe that, oh, well, we didn't do it. They bombed their own hospital. And now, oh, if we bomb that hospital, the terrorists who are just as bad as ISIS are underground.
Yeah. And all this, you know, look, even if you don't care, if you're one of these people who doesn't care about the civilians of Gaza, right? The Israeli government and the U.S. government claim that their top priority is freeing the hostages that Hamas is holding. Well, we've already seen Hamas release four people. If Israel wanted to, it could engage in negotiations directly. And what is Hamas asking for? Their concerns were just, their demands were just relayed by the Washington Post. Here it is. Hamas was proposing to release all foreign civilian hostages. Let me make this bigger. In exchange for a 5-day ceasefire. Israeli civilian hostages would be released if additional demands are met, including the release of Palestinian women and children in Israeli prisons and the opening of the Rafah border crossing so wounded civilians can receive care in Egypt and fuel, food and medicine and water can enter Gaza. But again, Israel's position is that no fuel can enter Gaza, which means that babies in incubators can die, water pumps can't work, because they don't want actually to free these hostages because they want to maintain any excuse they can to undertake what they're committing, which is mass murder.
Yeah, it's like Kuwaiti incubator babies, but real. Yep. The United Nations announced yesterday that Gaza's food situation was catastrophic. The hospitals have, well, Al-Shifa, for example, has announced they have 36 hours left of fuel before they can no longer operate. So we will see a massacre of civilians, of pregnant women, of people. I mean, you have people in Al-Shifa on dialysis who will simply die. I've been to the dialysis center there. At every level, it's a catastrophe. The oncology wards are shutting down. And obviously, people can't get out for emergency treatment that they can't get inside Gaza. And then you have something like at least 20,000 injured people, including critically injured people. You have the last figure I saw a week ago was 1,400 people missing. According to Gaza rescue crews, hundreds of people are trapped under the rubble and can't be rescued because they don't have the tools, the powerful tools that were granted by like NATO, British intelligence to the Syrian white helmets who have been showered with awards and welcomed in parliaments around the world. But the heroes saving lives in Gaza hospitals, well, they're just getting in the way of empire. So we're not hearing too much about them. We're not hearing much about the heroic journalists in the Gaza Strip, like Wael Dadu, who's back on air after his entire family was killed. From the Western press has nothing to say about them. They're not giving a pat on their back to their colleague. They don't even see him as a colleague. So,
and when was his home bombed? It was right after Antony Blinken reportedly was pressuring Qatar to, quote, tone down its coverage of Gaza. So Blinken, while he's encouraging the Israeli assault on Gaza, is directing his energies to encourage Al Jazeera to stop covering it properly. And right after he does that, then a home of probably the most prominent Al Jazeera journalist inside Gaza, or at least one of them, gets bombed. And you have to wonder if there's a connection there.
Yeah. Anthony Blinken actually made that demand to Qatar on October 13th. And then he revealed that he did it or boasted about it, according to Axios, in a speech to quote unquote American Jewish leaders. So he told them to turn down the volume. This is Wael Dadu back on camera after his family, his son was killed, his 7-year-old daughter was killed, his 18-month-old grandson was killed, his wife was killed. You know, and Anthony Blinken was boasting about trying to turn down the volume on Al Jazeera to Israel lobbyists. Why? Because Biden's running for re-election. He needs their support. There's no other reason. So this guy, as Anthony Blinken parades around the world, boasting about his support for press freedom, one of the most prominent journalists in the Arab world, is collateral damage for Antony Blinken and Joe Biden's reelection campaign at home. And Israel, did Israel deliberately target him? A prominent Israeli journalist went on Israel's Channel 13 and said, we didn't like his coverage. We had to kill him. I'm missing the video of that right now, but it's in Hebrew without translation. Take my word for it. It's disgusting. And, you know, we have a piece up on the site at thegrayzone.com by Wyatt Reed, compiling info on all the Palestinian journalists who've been targeted, killed, had their houses bombed. Tamer El-Mishal, another very prominent Al Jazeera Arabic journalist, first had his entire channel deleted by Meta one day after he published a special documentary at Al Jazeera Arabic on Meta's censorship of Palestinian outlets. And then at the beginning of Israel's assault, his house was bombed. We're also seeing doctors, directors of hospitals, the director of the Indonesian hospital, which is on the verge of running out of fuel in the north of Gaza. His family was killed in a targeted strike because he refused to evacuate the hospital. In the south, in Rafah, Dr. Sohail Hams, who I visited, in the Kuwaiti hospital, Israel demanded that they evacuate. He refused. The day he refused that order, his family was bombed at home. So these are targeted assassinations of doctors, of journalists. And just, you know, before we bring Gabor in, we're going to bring in Dr. Gabor Mate to put this in perspective. I was at the State Department yesterday for the briefing. For some reason, the FLAC, Matthew Miller, didn't call on me. I can't imagine why. But he was referring to the whole population of Gaza as human shields. And you could see the press pushing him more than they were at the beginning to try to establish some daylight between the State Department and the Israeli government on the notion that there are even civilians in Gaza. He refused to even cite the number that might have been killed in Gaza. He wouldn't budge from that position. And what I wanted to say to him, and what I'll try to do again, is if Antony Blinken is going to accuse China of genocide for its alleged treatment of the Uyghur minority without even alleging that there is any mass killing or systematic killing or any killing taking place, let alone forcible transfer, then how can they veto ceasefire resolutions when Israel is meeting all of the criteria for genocide? You have forced transfer, 1.1 people being forced from the north under penalty of being killed by missile strikes, ordered to leave. You have mass killing on a systematic level, including of political leadership and grassroots people, doctors across the board. And you have genocidal intent, Israeli leadership describing the population of Gaza as human animals, inhuman animals, according to former UN Ambassador Dan Gillerman, member of Knesset Moshe Feiglin, called for the annihilation of Gaza. Naftali Bennett, former prime minister, compared Gaza to Dresden and said, we must firebomb it, and on and on and on. Genocidal intent is clear. So they're meeting all of the standards for classical genocide. We don't throw around that term lightly. In fact, sometimes we'll challenge it when it's obviously being deployed as atrocity propaganda by the US to overthrow an official enemy, as you see with China. But this is pretty clear. It's pretty clear what's happening here. So with that, Aaron, why don't you introduce our guest, Dr. Gabor Mate.
Well, Gabor Mate is a retired physician and an author and also a survivor of another genocide, the Nazi Holocaust. And we wanted to bring him in just briefly to share his thoughts on what's going on in Gaza. Welcome, Dad.
Welcome.
Hi, how are you guys? It's one of those situations where somebody who deals with trauma in my work and who speaks so much, and words really are my métier, the words fail me at this point. It's difficult to explain how I perceive the situation, but in a certain deep sense, I feel that it's the worst thing I've seen in my whole life. And it's impossible to compare atrocities. I mean, nothing compares with the mechanized murder of 5-6 million Jews by the Nazis. what can compare to the slaughter of 3 million Vietnamese civilians by the Americans? The many murders and mass killings that are not even reported in the Western press, such as the Indonesian genocide in East Timor, such as the killing of 100,000 Guatemalan indigenous people in the 1990s by the American and Israeli-trained brutal military in that country. One could go on. But what is different about this is that I've never seen anything so publicly committed, such atrocities perpetrated on television, and the victims are presented as the perpetrators. And either this spectacle, this obscene, vicious spectacle that we're subjected to is either supported or condoned by the major media and all the politicians. Now, it's obligatory, and I think it's even necessary to say, this is my point of view, is that what happened on October 7th wasn't justifiable, that the killings of civilians, whatever details may yet emerge about intentions or what actually happened, that's not something that should have happened. That was something horrible, and it was an atrocity. But even the need to say that comes out of a culture in which the atrocities of the other side are never called out. No Israeli spokesman, when they talk about their policies, ever asked, do you condemn the pogrom at Hawara in the West Bank earlier this year? Do you condemn the killings of Palestinian children by settlers? Do you condemn the regular attacks by the settlers? Do you understand that the former deputy chief of staff of the Israeli army said that the situation of the Palestinians in the West Bank reminds him of the situation of Jews in Germany? Is this even reported in the Western press? And what he meant by is that the settlers, like the Nazi hooligans, are free to attack the Palestinians as the Nazis, thugs, the brown shirts, were free to attack Jews, and the army and the police not only stood by, they aided and abetted them. Is the Western public made aware of the thousands of Jewish Israeli rabbis and historians and intellectuals who recently signed a document calling the present situation clearly apartheid? Are you aware that the former head of Mossad has said that the situation of the Palestinians under the occupation is apartheid? And so when anybody is asked to speak about perpetrations on the Palestinian side, they're immediately asked to condemn and to denounce and to reject. And yet the daily suffering, crucifixion of the Palestinian people, and including and especially the people in Gaza, nobody's ever called to task. Nobody's ever questioned. And these smooth-faced liars in the Israeli army who would give lessons to Goebbels, Joseph Goebbels, who are masters of propaganda, like Goebbels never was. They're allowed to get away with it. Now, I'm speaking emotionally now. It's not helpful sometimes to speak emotionally because people get repelled by the anger or by the outrage that one generates. I understand the grief on both sides. I understand the sorrow. I've had communication from Israeli friends who are actually sympathetic to the Palestinian side, who are just in fear, who are full of thoughts of revenge. I get that. I understand it. But surely in this situation, whoever you are, whichever your side you're on, you got to get past your feelings. You can understand your feelings. You can accept them. But you ought, if you want truth, and if you want peace, and if you want justice, you can't just go by feelings. Feelings that are conditioned by decades of propaganda, decades of weaponizing the suffering of Jews as a baton with which to beat the Palestinians. You got to get past that. And you have to actually ask yourself, do I really know what's going on? Have I stood 1 second even in my mind in the shoes of the other? Have I tried to understand what's happening to those people? If they committed certain acts that are hateful, what drove them to that hate? Did the Palestinians come to Europe to attack Jews? Or did something happen in their land that made them so desperate? And finally, I'll only say that what happened there is not a secret. It's been documented. It's been written up by Israeli historians. I could name 5 of them right off the bat. Tom Segev, Simha Flapan, Ilan Pape, many others by Israeli journalists. None of this is even vaguely controversial from the historical point of view. And the fact that we live in such a bubble, and this bubble is created by the same Western press that brought us the Iraq War and the weapons of mass destruction, and yes, the Kuwaiti incubator children, leading to the death of 500,000 Iraqi civilians, the same Western press that brought us the Vietnam War. When Martin Luther King spoke out against the Vietnam War, do you remember what the New York Times said? New York Times said, this time he crossed over the line. It's that same press. You might want to ask yourself, why are there so either passive or enthusiastic cheerleaders for this genocide? Are you really going to trust them? Are you going to try and find out for yourself? So, yes, I'm speaking with a lot of emotion now. I did give it into you, an extensive one, a longer one, not so emotionally laden as these words have been now. But in light of the latest news from Gaza, with the apparently the cell phones, the internet being cut off, and the bombing and the bombings being escalated, you know what? I'm upset. I'm really upset. I have a lot of feelings of pain. I know what happened to my own people. Nothing that happened to us in any way justifies what's going on right now. I'll stop there.
Gabra, well, we should definitely do a more extensive interview with you, examining the psyche of Zionism in this current era, in this current phase, and possibly even the psyche of a population like that in Gaza Strip, which has been totally betrayed by the world and has taken on the role of one of history's greatest, most tormented victims, but which also is determined to resist with arms. What I want to get you now, before you go, to just respond to one thing. I just want to get your response to some comments Benjamin Netanyahu made before escalating.
The light, they are the people of darkness, and light shall triumph over darkness.
Let's hear that again.
The light, they are the people of darkness, and light shall triumph over darkness. Citizens of Israel, October 7th was a very dark and black day in our history. We will fully investigate what had happened at our southern border, the border with Gaza. Everybody will have to provide answers, myself included, but all that will happen only after the war. As a prime minister, I'm responsible for guaranteeing the future of this country, and now my role is to lead all Israelis, the state of Israel and the people of Israel, to an overpowering victory. It is now a time to come together for one purpose, to storm ahead to achieve victory. In joint with joint forces and a profound belief in our justness, a profound belief in the eternity of the Jewish people, we shall realize the prophecy of Isaiah. There will no longer be stealing at your borders, and your gates will be of glory. Together we will fight. Together we will win. People of the
light. So he starts off by referring to people of the light versus people of the darkness.
I'm happy to respond. I completely agree with Netanyahu. The light will triumph over the darkness. He's just a bit confused as to what represents light and darkness. He's one of the darkest minds on the world stage right now. He dares quote prophecy. I'll give him prophecy. It says in the Tanakh, thou shalt not oppress a stranger, for you know the heart of a stranger, you who yourself strangers in Egypt. And what Netanyahu has devoted his career to is oppressing the other. And he dares prattle on about light. What we're witnessing there, and you know, with Netanyahu, it's like with many other politicians, turn off the sound. Just listen to their body language. What you're seeing there is a person so alienated from his humanity, so committed to his ego, that, as they say in Hungarian, whatever he says, not even the opposite is true. It's so false, not even the opposite is true. And yeah, Bibi, the light will triumph, despite whatever you can do. And you have a lot of power to impose a lot of suffering, and you will, because that's your nature. That's what you committed to.
Well, thank you, Dr. Gabor Mate. I know you have to go, but I would love to see a more in-depth interview between you and Aaron along the lines of the one you did on Russiagate. Love to have you back, Aaron. I don't know if there's anything you want to.
No, thank you, Dad, so much for joining us.
Yeah, and I'm happy to come back to talk about the psychological underpinnings of these events for sure. Thank you both. Take care.
All right. Take care, Gabor. That was the prophetic voice right there of Dr. Gabor Mate. I think a much needed intervention today. It's very interesting to note Benjamin Netanyahu's language in the context of classically fascist rhetoric, but also as a preview of what was to take place. If something appears that's significant in a Netanyahu wartime speech, it's for a reason. He's not just speaking off the cuff. He was signaling that he was going to cut off the light, the all light and communications to Gaza, in my view. And now if you actually look at a satellite image, like a Maxar satellite of Gaza versus Israel, they are the people with light, and the people in Gaza are the people in total darkness. I'll read a message I just got from a friend, my Palestinian friends who I grew up with have lost all contact with their relatives in Gaza. One friend lost 14 members of her family, including a 2-week-old baby. Our politicians in the UK, this is a British friend, have lost all credibility, especially Labour. The second Nakba is unfolding. And I've lost contact with all people I know in Gaza. So in some senses, what Netanyahu is saying is literally true, but you cannot see more darkness in the eyes of a world leader. I mean, I hasten to call him a world leader, but in the eyes of a leader than Netanyahu. And it actually echoes rhetoric he tweeted before the Al-Ahli Baptist Hospital attack. He also referred to children of the light and children of darkness. He's been using this rhetoric a lot. He's trying to get Israel. He's pushing a religious war, even though he's not particularly religious, which is sort of one of the great contradictions of Zionism. You know, the first prime minister, David Ben-Gurion, an atheist socialist who insisted that the Bible entitled him to the land. I don't believe in God, but God gave me the land.
Yeah.
And Netanyahu is also mobilizing support within the Bible Belt in the U.S. and exactly. The Republican Party for this religious assault. And they're reframing Hamas from a nationalist Islamist group that it is, whose armed wing, the Al-Qassam Brigades, has consensus support within Palestinian society just because the act of armed resistance has consensus support. The political wing, maybe not, but they're reframing them as ISIS, as a global religious fascist entity, theocratic entity determined to establish a caliphate. And they are posing as the defenders of Judeo-Christian civilization. Netanyahu uses the language of the jungle versus the villa, Israel being the villa or the garden. And that's what's so dangerous about this moment. And the U.S. accepted that rhetoric.
Yeah, they're egged on by people like Lindsey Graham, who right at the start called for a religious war. Those are his words. Religious war. And he said, let's level the place, referring to Gaza. That's exactly what Israel is doing. And that's who their base is now inside the U.S. It's traditional neocons like Lindsey Graham, but also fanatic evangelicals.
And yeah.
That combination is combining to produce Armageddon. To fulfill their own prophecy. And I mean, we'll get to this. And then now the question becomes, will other fronts open up? Already, as we're speaking, the U.S. bombed Syria hours ago in purported retaliation for attacks on its troops there. And no one ever questions, of course, why U.S. forces are in Syria. But for now, I mean, just speaking of the genocidal toll in Gaza, I think we got to play this clip from the White House spokesperson, John Kirby.
Yeah.
Who, you know, the Biden administration is fully in lockstep with everything Israel is doing. The U.S. has instrumental leverage over Israel. Instead of using it to stop the assault, it's only trying to fuel it by arming Israel and blocking all diplomatic efforts. And John Kirby was asked at the White House about the toll so far of, I mean, now it's jumped exponentially, but at the time it was over 7,000 Palestinians killed. And he refused to accept that toll as legitimate.
President yesterday, John, said he has no confidence in the death toll numbers presented by the Palestinians in Gaza. What's he basing that on? How did he reach this conclusion?
Well, we all know that the Gazan Ministry of Health is just a front for Hamas. It's run by Hamas, a terrorist organization. I've said it myself up here. We can't take anything coming out of Hamas, including the so-called Ministry of Health, at face value.
President yesterday, John, said he...
I mean, first of all, I don't even think it's true that the Ministry of Health is run by Hamas. I believe it's under the authority of the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank. But regardless, the State Department has used the Gaza Health Ministry's figures multiple times. So even what Kirby is saying there is contradicted by established U.S. policy. And even if that weren't U.S. policy, it would still be ridiculous what he's saying. But that's where we're at right now, is not just, you know, genocide abetting, but genocide denial.
John Kirby is such a fake little hypocritical crisis actor. I mean, he always cries fake tears. You can't even see the tears. It's the fakest fake crying I've ever seen for the victims of any official designated U.S. enemy. Like, he cried fake tears for Ukrainian civilians. And then when it comes to just regular people in Gaza being slaughtered, he said, I don't have the clip in front of me, but to paraphrase it, he said, well, death happens in war, and we just expect a lot of death. And this is what the death toll looks like in Gaza. These are the names produced by the confirmed death toll produced by Gaza's health ministry, including the ID numbers of every person killed. And it just goes on and on, along with their ages. You can see 1, 2, 3, 28, 16, 5, 4. And we know of so many people who've been killed in recent days. Everybody I talk to has lost family members who lives in Gaza.
Or this is before today's carpet bombing. So you can't even fathom what that list will look like.
It just goes on and on and on. We're not even at 3,000 dead yet. You know, this is something that, you know, if you're involved in activist work, plaster these on wheat paste all around your city. Make everyone see these names. Bring them to rallies. Show these names everywhere, because the U.S. is denying that they exist, and it's calling them all human shields. This is the most ghastly dehumanization of a people by my government I've ever seen. And I, as I said, at the State Department briefing, it was the same talking points. They're human shields. We mourn the loss of civilian life, but we question these numbers by the Gaza Health Ministry. And it's because the PR price is just too much for the U.S. to bear. If they admit that Israel has slaughtered over 7,000, probably 8,000 by the end of today, tonight, in 2 weeks or so, how will that work with younger Democrats, for example? Because obviously all they care about is getting reelected at this point in the Biden administration. It's not clear to me they're trying to stabilize the region. How will that play? So there's...
And meanwhile, the Gaza municipality, a building that would be heavily involved in collecting figures like this and hold Gaza's records and archives, they've warned that they've received a threat from Israel that they're going to be bombed. It's the headquarters for the city administration. It stood for nearly 200 years. This building houses vital city documents and archives, and the execution of the occupation threats to bombard it would plunge the city into significant chaos. So yeah. Even the people who collect the records of the massacres of the people of Gaza are being erased. Even now they're under threat.
Yeah, I mean, this. As I said last week, what Israel does is it just basically has a population register in its possession and an informant network. And they start with what they think their top level targets are. And then they move from there and eventually run out of targets. They start targeting any political activist, anyone they hear might be affiliated with Hamas, and they kill their entire family while they're in the home, 19 people, 15 people. The house collapses on them, And then they just tell the U.S. We're striking terror targets. I mean, the fact that anyone is using the language of terror targets at this point or striking Hamas is just scandalous. It's completely scandalous, along with this generally tepid response of mainstream U.S. media. I mean, Jake Tapper is still in Israel doing like October 7th propaganda, and he's interviewing like an Israeli government asset, an Israel lobby propagandist who says he's the son of a Hamas leader. I mean, it's just the cheapest. They've run out of propaganda, and now they're just recycling Israeli foreign ministry propaganda. And meanwhile, I mean, their massacres are happening like this, and the Israeli public is not being shown 1 second of this. They're not seeing any of this. There's a total consensus support in Israeli society for carpet bombing Gaza right now. As Gideon Levy at Haaretz pointed out today, the left in Israel, the sort of respectable left there within like the Meretz party, whatever was left of labor, all those people protesting Netanyahu for quote unquote democracy in Tel Aviv have become the greatest cheerleaders for the war. And the right has descended into all out fascism as we see violent settler attacks on Palestinians that have killed dozens in the West Bank. So the reins are off. There's no political restriction on Netanyahu or the Israeli military to operate freely. And we're not seeing it from the US, at least publicly, although we do have some interesting news out of the UN, but there was a Canadian resolution to call for a ceasefire, and or Canada abstained. Sorry. Yeah,
I was going to say, I wouldn't, Justin Trudeau, such a.
Yeah. Well, it's still significant. Canada has abstained on an emergency resolution at the UN General Assembly calling for an immediate, durable, and sustained humanitarian truce leading to a cessation of hostilities. So it passed with 120 votes in favor.
Okay, so that's the UN General Assembly, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Not the
but it's significant council. That some, you know, and Justin Trudeau was heckled earlier today by Canadian activists. He was booed at a mosque that he was attempting to visit over Gaza. And now he's abstained. The United States, you can see, is one of the 14 votes along with some of its tools, the famously famous geopolitical power, Papua New Guinea, against this resolution. But Canada has abstained. I mean, look at how ardently Canada supported the assault, the proxy war in Ukraine.
Yeah. The UK also abstained.
Yeah.
I guess that's just a reflection of fear of their own populations. Like, the outrage that their complicity is causing. I guess they don't want to inflame that further by voting along with the US. So they have to abstain. But
well, and there's enormous pressure from, you know, what we would think would be the vassal states in the Arab world. Jordan, Queen Rania declaring that the West doesn't care about Palestinian lives. King Abdullah denouncing the US at a gathering of the Arab League. This is essentially the most complicit or compliant state in the Arab world. Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, who is basically installed into power by the UK and the US, dressing down Tony Blinken when he was meeting with them. The US and by extension UK are facing a complete collapse of credibility, even among the governments that they essentially control in the Arab world. So the pressure is mounting, and it really helps explain the timing of whatever Israel's doing right now. And going back to a point I was making before, this is a little disjointed. Israeli society has passed a transition point towards fascism with the election of Benjamin Netanyahu in 2009, And you would see these attitudes of Israeli youth who are indoctrinated to participate in, you know, the military through full conscription, expressing that kind of fascism, where the Israeli Democracy Institute around that time started documenting over 50% of Israeli youth declaring they would never live next door to an Arab. They would not want an Arab in their school. And they, the majority of Israelis telling the Israeli Democracy Institute index that they favor the forced transfer of Palestinians. That was all leading up to now, but now it's just.
By the way, Max, you made a great video on this back then when you went and interviewed Israelis. And what did you call it? Feeling the Hate in Israel?
Well, I did a series of Feeling the Hate, which is completely suppressed on YouTube. But and Feeling the Hate in Jerusalem has been banned by YouTube and Vimeo and everyone else. But yeah, I mean, that's when I started exposing what was going to happen, because I felt like it was building up to something that would lead up to regional war and possibly world war. And it emanates from this. It emanates from this mentality that we're now seeing, because we're now in an era of total social media proliferation, where the zeitgeist, the ugliest zeitgeist of a society, cannot be hidden. And the citizens are so proudly exhibitionist of their fascism that we see Israelis mocking, I mean, this is a trend now. Israelis mocking Palestinians for dying.
Oh, and this is sick. Youth this
is involving sick. Their children as well. And everybody needs to see what Zionism has done to Jewish people living in Israel and Jewish people who support Zionism. These are entire families mocking families in Gaza for dying, involving their children. They think it's funny. This is just sheer unadulterated sadism, and it's the mentality that brought Netanyahu's governing coalition to power and his war cabinet. And when you look at this, you say, what kind of government could even get away with a ceasefire or some kind of deal for captives with this population? When it has to be accountable to this population for votes. I don't think Israel will stop what it's doing in Gaza until it satiates the bloodlust of its citizens, unless somebody from outside stops it, whether they stop it through military force or they stop it through imposing diplomatic pressure. And right now the UN is completely failing to be able to do anything. It's just pure hatred. The contempt that you see on display there preceded October 7th, and I think precipitated October 7th. It's what precipitated it. And for many in Gaza, it was like, you know what? You've been treating us like animals, so to hell with you. That's not a mentality I support. I'm not condoning it. When you keep people in a cage for so long, and then you just start shaking the cage again and again, and they break out, do you expect them to throw candy on you?
Well, Max, speaking of shaking, I mean, so in Israel, you see on display there this insane sadism from its people, its politicians. And then what are you getting from, you know, some segments, not us, obviously, but other segments of the American Jewish community? You have headlines like this in the New York Times. Why Jews cannot stop shaking right now. This like ridiculous navel gazing and self-victimization is that somehow American Jews are under threat and they're the victims here. And they're the ones who should be worried as their tax dollars are funding a genocide of people in Gaza. And their culture, I mean, our culture is being weaponized to inflict this catastrophe, this genocide inside Gaza. And yet, so the American Jewish culture, segments of it, liberal Zionist American Jewish culture, is navel-gazing and self-victimization.
Yeah. I mean, you have a culture that is breaking apart and assimilating in the U.S., and they're looking for something to hold them together. And they thought they found it with Israel under attack. Finally, we can be the victim again. You know, we don't, a lot of us are secular. We don't like going to shul. But we have this Zionist pillar that we can rally around. And for years, we've been told that they're the oppressor. It's apartheid. And now it's the Holocaust again. And you heard CNN anchors again and again repeating the line, the worst killing of Jews since the Holocaust, constantly invoking the Holocaust and erasing the whole history of the siege of Gaza, the occupation of Palestine. And this is the kind of narcissistic, self-indulgent drivel, embarrassing, cringeworthy drivel that pours out in the pages of America's premier journals from the most affluent, privileged group living in a golden age in America. It's just so disgusting. And it actually is fueling anti-Semitism for non-Jews to see this kind of behavior. They might not say it, but people are starting to, I think people are becoming resentful of this kind of entitlement.
As they should.
The disproportionality of violence is so extreme and so obvious for everyone to see.
Yeah.
I mean, think about Wael Dadu. He lost his entire family in a targeted airstrike, and he's on air the next day. But Jews in like New York are literally shaking, and they're literally shaking. They're not literally shaking, by the way. That's like some fake internet term. But yeah, they're playing the victim. They're trying to, and they're the biggest hypocrites to these kind of like neocons who emerged during like the late stage of COVID, like Barry Weiss, as these proud opponents of censorship, supporters of free speech, who, you know, like Barry Weiss didn't do anything about the mandates until the end when she realized it was popular. And she, you know, she quit the New York Times because, you know, they're not letting people denounce identity politics enough and they're against wokeism. But when it comes to their own ethno-religious sect, their own ethno-religious group, if anyone touches a hair on their head, all of a sudden it's the second Holocaust. And anyone who says anything critical of them has to be fired from their jobs, defunded, totally destroyed, and their organizations have to be banned. They don't believe in free speech at all. They believe in a total Palestine exception for free speech. Barry Weiss has to be the biggest fraud in American media just because of that fake role of the courageous crusader against the woke mob.
You've been listening to Gray Zone Radio. This episode was the first part of last week's live stream, in which Max Blumenthal and Aaron Mate discussed the ongoing war in Palestine. There was also a guest appearance by Gabor Mate. To listen to the entire live stream, find The Gray Zone on YouTube. You can find the link at thegrayzone.com. That's thegrayzone.com. You can also find us on Twitter, Telegram, and Instagram. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week. I've been your co-host, Christopher Weaver.
And this is Michael Lovick, the interim general manager here at KPFK, taking these few minutes at the end of the Gray Zone to ask you to donate to the station. We're in the last day of our October fall fund drive, membership drive, and we would like to get a few more dollars in the door. Max Blumenthal, you know, wrote a book exposing the Christian fundamentalists who had taken over the Republican Party and transformed it into a fascist operation. That was a fair-haired boy. And then he wrote a book called Goliath about Zionism and what it was doing, and suddenly became persona non grata. But KPFK is a place that will air him about all of that and more. And if you appreciate that kind of free speech, please support the station now. You might not agree with everything he has to say, but this is the station that defends his right to say it. KPFK.org, click on donate and become a sustainer if you can, or if you're already a sustainer, you might want to make an additional donation. Or give us a call, 818-985-5735. I'm sure you've heard the number many times. 818-985-KPFK and press 2 for the pledge line. Make a donation. We've raised about $100,000 in this drive, and that sounds like a lot of money, but it's barely enough to stay in operation. We want to double our income, and we want to double our membership, and you can help do that by letting people know about the station and letting people know about the great diversity of viewpoints and information you get here, and see about becoming members themselves. If every person who listened now became a member, we wouldn't have the financial problems we have. Only about 1 in 10 of you are actually subscribing. So this is your chance to do it now, 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK, press 2 to make a pledge. Thank you. And coming up next is the Rebel Alliance News, and I'll be on the air at 7 with a report to the listener at greater length. So tune back in. You can call us then on the same number. Press 1 for the studio line at that time.
Please help keep independent journalism alive and KPFK Radio strong.